Hello, all of you out there in Radio Land. You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. For our virtual listeners, we hope your device stays locked onto our website at kptz.org. I'm Marianne McNellis, and this show is called Our Town. The show highlights some of the diverse personalities that make Jefferson County, Washington so very special. Our Town profiles people from all walks of life, from firefighters to foodies, from bus drivers to baristas, and even the lawyers and the ladies who lunch. If you think about it, this is the third spring we're facing the continued pandemic. In 2020, we were also scared that most of us barely ventured out of our homes. In 2021, there was a little more action, but the town was still largely a ghost town. Some businesses closed their doors forever. Those that remained were hanging on by their fingernails. Now, 2022, there's a lot more happening. Tourists are back. Lots of people are no longer wearing masks. Lots of people are going shopping or out to dinner or even to the movies. If you listen to KPTZ for the updates on COVID, you soon discover that the number of cases around here continues to bubble up. COVID is all around us. However, I'm delighted to report that you cannot, repeat not, catch COVID while listening to Our Town on KPTZ. Well, I guess you could if you happen to be listening to the show in a crowded place with lots of unvaccinated people. Solution, I suggest you listen in somewhat solitary splendor. Listening to Our Town is a way to meet some of the fascinating people around here. It's a good way to get to know people you don't know or don't know very well. Today, my guest is someone that plays a vital role in the community. Her position is one that's key to the local economy. My guest today is Amanda Milholland, who is the director of both the Port Townsend Farmers Market and the Chimicum Farmers Market. I guess I would dub her the puppet master behind the farmers market. You always knew there was someone masterminding the whole thing, didn't you? So welcome to the show, Amanda.
Thank you.
Before we get started talking about the farmers market here in Port Townsend and in Chimicum, might be a great idea to get to know a little bit of your background. Are you a local girl born and bred in Port Townsend?
Great question. I was born in Portland but grew up in Port Townsend. My family had been living in Port Townsend prior to my birth. So in most respects, this feels like my home of origin and definitely where I grew up. We moved back here when I was just a couple months old.
And what did your parents do?
My dad worked as a commercial fisherman and also a diver. And then in my youth, most of his work was in construction. And my mom was a cook and also did childcare and also was our primary parent. So different roles.
Okay. And are you an only child or do you have siblings?
I have siblings. I have a younger brother, Danny Milholland, who some people sometimes assume I'm married to because we share the same last name, but that's actually because we're siblings, not married.
Okay, we'll just make that clear.
Okay. Now it's on the record.
Yes. So you attended school in Port Townsend. I always like to ask about people's high school years. The teenage years are very formative for virtually everyone. You enter as a kid and you leave supposedly as an adult. But kids label each other. They sort of say, you know, she's a jock, he's a nerd, whatever. What do you think your peers thought about you?
I feel like I fit into several different groups, but also didn't entirely fit into any of them. I was an artist and I had friends who were jocks, but I wasn't particularly athletic myself. I had friends in student leadership and was a student leader myself. And there were plenty of people that I hung out with that didn't necessarily fit into one group or another, kind of like myself. So yeah, I don't think I have a specific group. It was more that I was interested in people for who they were and got to know people who had common interests with me.
Do you still have contacts with some of your high school mates?
Yeah, I do. Living in Port Townsend, I have the benefit of having some of them come back to visit from other parts of the state and world where they live. And then there's a handful of people who I went to high school with who are still friends living in Port Townsend.
And when you were growing up, was there an expectation at home that you and your brother would go on to university?
Not necessarily. My mom graduated from the University of Chicago, and my dad tried out university, and it wasn't the right fit for him. And he found that his educational path was one of do-it-yourself and learning the trades through actually being in them. So that was, it was definitely not the expectation that that was necessarily the path for all people or for my brother and myself. I found that it was the right path for me. My brother followed a different path, also similar to my dad's, where he jumped into studies through being directly in the world.
So where did you end up going to school?
I went to the Evergreen State College in Olympia.
Now, I don't know a lot about it, but I understand Evergreen has a somewhat different philosophy than many universities. And a lot of our listeners probably don't know either what it really focuses on. Can you explain a bit?
For sure. There's a lot of focus on being independently motivated and on doing, there's ability for you to do some of your own study where you find a teacher who will be kind of your sponsor in a way, and then you are designing your own curriculum. There's a lot of group learning, and a lot of people walk away without a specific degree in, I have a Bachelor of Arts degree, more generally, as opposed to having a very specific I studied X, Y, and Z degree. I studied several different things and ultimately came away with ability to learn new things and being a stronger writer and just having confidence that I could go into different situations and figure out how to do something. I didn't come away with a standard degree.
Well, so what were some of the courses that really influenced you, that helped you?
I studied Latin American history and Middle Eastern history, some art classes, some child development, and mythology, U.S. mythology classes. I think more than having any particular subject be appealing to me and be kind of lead me, it was, I took the most away from the teachers, the specific teachers I studied with, and teachers that were highly engaged and taught in a way that really allowed me to come into my strength as a learner were most inspiring to me. And just that ability to engage with a subject with curiosity and a lot of questions and figure things out through study and then come back to my peers for conversation about what I was learning, those kind of things were the strongest takeaways for me.
Is there any one individual teacher that really stands out in your mind that was a key influence on you?
Yeah, a teacher named Steve Naiva. I took a handful of classes from him around Middle Eastern and South American history and political science. And he was also a teacher who I did some independent study with him as kind of my sponsor teacher. And he was just someone I really admired, who had a great teaching style. And I really appreciated that he was trusting of me as a student to be able to take some leadership in my own path. And that was really helpful for me, just coming into a place of being confident as a learner.
I sometimes think that those special teachers don't get enough, sort of shout outs and how much they mean to people.
For sure.
And I hope you have managed to tell him.
I probably should tell him at some point.
Yeah, you can get him to listen to this show.
Oh, yeah, good idea.
Then he can see what you're doing.
Yeah.
Okay, so did you graduate?
I did. Yeah, okay. I graduated in 2004.
Okay, mm-hmm. And most people, there is a big wide world out there, and some of them know exactly what they're going to do, and others don't. Were you focused? Did you know what you wanted to do?
I think I knew to some degree, even as a child, what I wanted to do, but it took me a while to fully piece together what I was looking for in terms of how did it play out into a profession. So my parents really were strong leaders in our community, doing work that I could see was making a difference in the world. And for me, that was something that I really wanted to figure out how to do in my working life, was find work where I could show up and feel like I was doing something that had an impact on my community. locally or regionally or internationally, whatever that kind of term of community meant at the time. So I knew that I wanted to find that kind of work, and I have found it most strongly in my work within the nonprofit field. So I have done various work as a barista and in food service and for bakeries and nurseries.
Your first sort of big job?
For sure, yeah. I was an HIV/AIDS educator with a local nonprofit in Olympia. And that, for me, was the first time that I really felt like I was able to connect my passion for community service with my work.
Wait a second. I thought when we talked the other day, you mentioned being in the Peace Corps. Where does that fit in?
That's after.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So first you did the HIV.
Yeah. Training. And that led into my Peace Corps work.
I've always wondered about this. You don't have a medical degree or anything like that. So where do counselors like that, where do they get their training? How does it work?
That's a great question. Well, I would have to give a shout out to one of my local mentors, Hillary Metzger. When I was a high school student, she led a peer-to-peer reproductive health education program, and I was part of that, and I loved it. And when I had an opportunity to work with United Communities AIDS Network in Olympia, it was partially drawing from that work and partially drawing from my own study. So I took time shadowing someone else who had been doing that work and learned through watching them teach. And then I did a ton of reading. And so that was kind of a great time for me to take the experience I had at Evergreen and put it into practice, that sometimes you learn something by going to school for it. And sometimes you learn something because you learn how to be a learner, and then you're able to do it independently. And that's something that I have relied on a lot in my varied career, is being able to teach myself something.
Well, Hillary was on the show a while back, and I must say, she would be an inspiring teacher. She's very passionate. And I could see that as a teacher, she would really impart something to the kids.
For sure. She's passionate. She's got a super positive attitude. And just seeing someone like Hillary in action, for me, was really inspiring, and definitely was what helped shape the first part of my career in nonprofit work.
Okay. And so how long did you stay with that?
I worked with them for a couple of years. Uh-huh. And then I applied for and was accepted to do the Peace Corps in Uganda.
So what inspired you to go the Peace Corps route?
One of my uncles had done the Peace Corps in his youth, and I had heard his stories about it. And when he told me stories about it, I just remember this aha moment of, I want to do that. I want to have the opportunity to do work that feels valuable somewhere else in the world, and actually be able to be part of a community for a long enough period of time that I can get to know it and really have a deeper understanding of what it means to live somewhere else, and also what it means to be from this place. Sometimes it's hard to know your own water if you're swimming in it all the time.
So had you ever traveled overseas before the Peace Corps?
A little bit, yeah. My family traveled in Mexico when I was younger a handful of times. I had the opportunity to travel in Guatemala with my aunt and cousin, and to Japan as a high school student. So a handful of places. Mm-hmm. And but Uganda was my first venture into the great continent of Africa.
And so what did you do? What was part of your role with the Peace Corps? There are many different things that Peace Corps people do.
Yeah, for sure. I was part of the first group that was specifically focused on HIV/AIDS education. So it fit very much with my past work experience in Olympia. And I was part of a group of 12 women who were all doing HIV/AIDS related education. And the organization I was working with worked kind of broadly around that subject. They saw themselves very much as a community development organization and did a number of different types of projects based on the community need, many of which were serving people who were living with AIDS. they didn't actually have an HIV/AIDS education component before I started working with them. They were more focused on doing animal rearing and other small income generation projects serving people who are living with AIDS. Mm-hmm.
Give us an example of what were you doing, one-on-one counseling? Were you running classes? What were you actually doing?
Yeah, I was doing a whole variety of things. It was a really wonderful learning opportunity for me. I taught directly at 10 different schools, and then I did some reproductive health education for teachers from 21 different schools. I also was working with my host organization on water sanitation projects, mostly helping them kind of develop methods for doing some fundraising. A lot of that was actually connecting to people internationally, including a lot of people here in Port Townsend who helped with funds for being able to build water projects in Uganda. So different types of wells that were built while I was there.
And so how long were you there?
Peace Corps is a 27-month commitment. So okay. I was there for just over 2 years. And then afterwards did some travel with one of my Peace Corps friends around Eastern Africa and into Southern Africa.
And then you returned to the USA.
Yes, I did.
Okay. So re-entry, how was it?
Oh, it was really hard. I think anyone who's spent a good chunk of time outside of the country knows that it takes a while to adjust back to living in your country of origin. For me, it was just shocking. I thought that I was going to come back and that it would feel familiar. And while it did, it felt familiar, but like I was watching it from the outside and that I didn't quite know how to engage with my own culture in a way that made sense for me.
Use an example.
The most striking thing for me was food. When it came to my food relationship in Uganda, 80 to 88% of the economy is based on agriculture. I was living really close to the capital city, but still most of my neighbors were producing the majority of their own food. And when I went to the market to get my food, I was primarily buying it from the people who grew it or buying it from a vendor who was selling product that was generated within my community. So if they didn't make it themselves, then it was from the couple cows down the road or something like that. Coming into grocery stores back in Port Townsend, which is where I was initially when I came home, I found that there were, you know, 50 or more types of cereal on the cereal aisle, and that I had, you know, numerous choices of produce, including things that weren't grown anywhere near me. And I was completely overwhelmed. I had a number of times where I went grocery shopping and left the store without buying anything because I was just didn't know how to make choices. And it felt really alien to not know where any of it came from.
So how did you, you know, manage to re-enter, and what was your path?
Yeah, great question. So my brother was living in Portland at the time, and at some point he knew that I was struggling and didn't quite know what I was doing, and he called me up, my younger brother. I'm not used to taking his advice necessarily at this right. point in my life, but he called me up and said, okay, Amanda, you are going to move to Portland. I have a room that's opening up in the house that I'm renting. You're going to move in here, and you're going to try, you know, figure it out from here. And so I did. I took him up on it, and when I arrived, I was able to find a job fairly quickly in the nonprofit field, working with adults with developmental disabilities. And I also started pretty obsessively looking for ways to produce my own food. At that point in time, I didn't have any space for a garden. So I started collecting windfall fruit. So I would go on runs around my neighborhood, and I sometimes would come with a bag, and I would just pick up plums and pears and apples and bring them home and can them. And I was producing so many jars of food. It was really beyond ridiculous because I couldn't use it all, but I just had such a hard time seeing it rot on people's yeah. yards. So that was kind of the beginning of this path for me. I had the opportunity to buy a house in Portland and turned the yard into a garden, and then eventually expanded the garden into my neighbor's yard. And this was all part of coming to some place of being able to produce more of my own food and being able to know where it came from. And also, I fell in love with farmers markets in Portland.
Okay. And that gets us to the very important question. How did you end up back here in Port Townsend running the farmers market here?
I re-met my husband. He and I had gone to high school together, but he was 3 years ahead of me, Gabe Van Lelyveld. And he had also moved to Portland around the same time. And at some point we met there. He was actually working on a film project that overlapped with my work. So we met through that and eventually decided to get married and have children. And when we decided to have children, Port Townsend started making a lot of sense as a place to be. Both of us have family here. I was living on a right off of a very busy street in Portland and just couldn't quite imagine my small children running around my yard so close to a main road. So we decided to come back here for the support of family and friends in this community. When my daughter was just a couple months old, I heard about the farmers market hiring, and a number of people mentioned it to me, knowing my background in nonprofit work and my interest in growing my own food. And I kept on putting it off as something to think about because I had a small baby and I wasn't ready to go back to work yet. But then one night, I woke up in the middle of the night and realized I had been dreaming about working for the farmers market. And it was kind of
a sign.
It was a sign. It was something I couldn't ignore anymore. And so I ended up applying for the job as the market director and started working with the market in October 2015.
Yes. And you were a guest on this show shortly after you started. I think the farmers market has changed a lot over the intervening years, and we'll talk about the pandemic a little bit separately, but why don't you just give a few facts on the growth? You told me now that the vendors currently for this season are 115. I was really surprised and impressed. I don't think it was that big in 2015.
Definitely not. That number does include local nonprofits. So we do provide space for local nonprofits at the farmers market. The actual farm, food, and art vendors is more like 90 between our two farmers markets. When I first started working with the market, it was closer to 70, 75 in a good year. And that includes some vendors that are overlapping with both farmers markets.
Okay. You told me that farms take precedence in terms
yes.
you have sort of in your mind. And then I always wonder, you know, how do you choose, you know, people who grow tomatoes, everyone grows tomatoes. You can't have 25 tomato vendors. How do you make the mix work?
Yes, we are a farmers market. So we prioritize making sure that there's space for Jefferson County farms at the farmers market first. We don't generally rule out farms from participating in the farmers market. And generally what I found is that there, yes, there's product overlap, but among farmers, if there's five vendors carrying tomatoes, it's not an issue. There's enough tomatoes to go around in that when there's five vendors with tomatoes, and people really like seeing that mix of farm products. So it's never been an issue having a lot of farms at the market. It's always something that we really strive for.
Okay, there are fees to be part of mm-hmm. the market, but they don't strike me as terribly high.
No.
In fact, you said Chimicum has a flat fee of, was it $20 a
yep.
day?
Mm-hmm.
And Port Townsend is a little bit more expensive, but
it's the price varies based on how much space somebody's using.
Right.
So for a farm vendor, they pay $20 for a single space. And then there's a 4% fee that is on top of that based on sales. And the food and art vendors, it's 25 and the 4% fee. Really, if you look at farmers markets in other parts of this region, we are charging really competitive fees. And that's something that we value as a farmers market. We really want to make sure that the market is an accessible place for small businesses to get started. So we have prioritized keeping those fees low. It means that we do more fundraising to help offset some of the costs of operating the farmers market. So our market sponsors, local businesses here in this community, and also small grants help offset the work of our markets.
Okay. Now, the market pretty much stayed open through the pandemic, but traffic died way, way down.
Yes.
Can you put that a little in perspective?
So the first year of the pandemic, we opened our markets at the beginning of April, and we had to start the season a couple weeks late. And we really had a big piece of work in front of us. The farmers market is known in our community both as a place to buy food, but also as a community gathering space.
Right.
And events were prohibited.
Right.
And so one of the pieces that was happening, in large part thanks to the Washington State Farmers Market Association, was work figuring out how to make sure that it was clear to our elected officials that farmers markets are more than community gathering space. They are essential food destinations. They are places where people come to get their groceries. And so we really focused, as we opened up our season mid-April, on making sure that we were putting food for our community first, making sure that we were providing a safe place where people could come and get food and buy directly from local farmers and other food vendors.
Right.
And at the same time, we also opened an online store with the intention of making sure that both vendors and community members who didn't feel comfortable coming to the farmers market during the early days of the pandemic had other options.
Right. We're running seriously short of time here. I just want to say that the community in general is really happy that some of the cultural events are back, whether it's the music or the stories for kids or whatever. That's important too. But obviously, during the heart of the pandemic, the food was the key element.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all happy that things are going so well. I want to thank you for being a guest on the show, and we could go on for another hour or two about this. Anyhow, you've been listening to Our Town on KPTZ, Port Townsend 91.9 FM. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. My guest today, Amanda Milholland, the director of the two Jefferson County Farmers Markets, Port Townsend Farmers Market and Chimicum Farmers Market. In addition to thanking Amanda, I want to thank Taylor Clark, the editor and producer of Our Town. Many of you don't realize how critical the role of an editor is on a show like this. A good editor can edit out a lot of ums, ers, mumbles, and make us sound so eloquent and smooth. Thank you, the listener, for sticking with KPTZ during these troubled times. Hopefully, we'll end this pandemic sometime and open the door on some sunshine and happiness. The show's called Our Town. I'm Marianne McNellis. I'm signing off for today, but please keep listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM for more dynamic, eclectic community radio.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production, created by Marianne McNellis and edited by Taylor Clark.